and I want to welcome you to the podcast for this week. On I Want to Know More for this week, we're going to 2 Samuel chapter number 19. 2 Samuel chapter number 19. David has just received the news that Absalom is dead. He is weeping and wailing over his son, as he should, because it's his son. Verse number 1, though, we learn when we hear a little bit more about the story. And it was told Joab, "Behold, the king weepeth and mourneth for Absalom. And the victory that day was turned into mourning unto all the people, for the people heard say that day how the king was grieved for his son." All right, we're going to stop there because we need to deal with this. We need to deal with this. There's a lot of layers of depth to David's grief. Let's think about this for a few minutes, because I think it'll help you. I think it'll help you. David isn't just grieving for his son. He's also grieving that he messed up. It was his fault. Have you ever dealt with a loss that you knew without a shadow of a doubt, you knew it was due to your own misdecision, bad decision, bad action, sin, whatever it might be? Have you dealt with a great loss that you knew beyond a shadow of a doubt was your own fault? There are a lot of people who have. And I have nothing but compassion for folks. If you've, you know, whatever it might be. You know, it may not be that you committed a sin. You know, chastisement is not the only reason why you might suffer loss for something you did. In this case it is. In David's case, he loses his son because of his sin. But, let's look at it a different direction. We've been pushing the idea that David wound up lusting after Bathsheba at the end of a process. It was a process. It was not an instantaneous thing. It was not a spur-of-the-moment thing that happened to David here. Several things conspired to bring him to this place. And it started way back when he took Abigail and Ahinoam as his wives, because it became acceptable to him in his own eyes to have multiple wives. God made one man and one woman, and neither one of them got a choice. There wasn't anybody else. God put them together. "What God hath joined together, let not man put asunder." God puts people together for different reasons. I know the way my wife and I met, we met at a revival meeting at the old Balsam Grove Community Center. And I remember it very well. The Lord made it clear to me this was to be my wife. It took a little longer to convince her. but I was successful in convincing her that it was the Lord's will. And it was the Lord's will. The Lord put us together. And we obeyed the Lord's will in that matter. And has it always been easy? Of course not. This idea of happily ever after, people need to get over that. Those are fairy tales for a reason. There is no happily ever after. There's joyfully ever after, perhaps. There's in the will of God ever after with each other, perhaps. But you're going to go through tough times. You're going to go through good times. You're going to go through times of sickness and in health. There's a reason why the marriage vows contain those things. It's because people have learned over the years that those things happen. Through sickness and in health, for richer, for poorer, for better, for worse, till death do you part. That's the way God intended it. That way, there's no possibility that you'll leave each other's side. And you work it out. You work it out and make it work. Well, David, his wife, Michal, was given to another man by Saul, but she was still David's wife. According to the scripture says, Michal, David's wife. It doesn't say David's first wife. It says David's wife. And David started this whole snowball rolling when he took Abigail in and hit on him. Now, it's questionable as to which one was first, whether Ahinoam of Jezreel was first and Abigail was next, well, second, and Abigail was third, or Abigail was second and Ahinoam was third. The lists of the sons born to David make it seem like Ahinoam was before Abigail. And David had sons, but he married other women. Once he went to number two, it was easier to go to number three. Once he went to number three, it was that much easier to go to number four, and so on. By the time he gets down to where he sees Bathsheba, he has all these wives. They've all had children. None of them are as youthful as they used to be. And he sees this very youthful, very lovely, very fair to look upon, Bathsheba. And he doesn't care if she is another man's wife. He's used to the idea of multiple wives. He's used to the idea of being king and everybody giving him whatever he wants, whenever he wants it. And he takes advantage of the situation and takes Bathsheba. And then kills Uriah to try to cover it all up. His consequences have come home to roost. He knows this. Whether he realizes that, you know, Absalom wouldn't be a problem if there weren't multiple wives to begin with. See, the problem with multiple wife households in the day that David lived was rivalries between the wives. The wives would be rivals and would be working to try to get their sons or their son. It seems like each one had one son. And I'm not going to go into a whole lot of detail about why that might be, but we'll just leave it at the idea that each wife was jockeying for position for her son to be the one, to be the king after David. And that would elevate that woman to being queen mother. And that is where each one wanted to be. It was very competitive. And when you start understanding the competition between these women, and you start understanding where the favorites lay, can you imagine Amnon's mother and Absalom's mother, how they would have not gotten along after Absalom killed Amnon? Consider this. And David did nothing. Now, what about those women? What about David's wives? What about the mother of Amnon? What happened to her? Her hope for being queen mother was dead. And it was dead at the hands of one of the other wives' sons. The household of David was not a happily ever after. No. And he was reaping the whirlwind. He sowed the wind and he reaped the whirlwind with Absalom. Even if he had never gone to Bathsheba, Absalom was a ticking time bomb. Yeah. Absalom probably would have rebelled regardless, but after this with Bathsheba and after seeing his daddy, Absalom had zero respect for his dad. He didn't have any respect for his father. He despised his father. And the lack of action by David about Amnon sealed the deal. Absalom says, well, if he can be this way about the firstborn, how's he going to be about me? He doesn't really care about any of us. All he wants is more women. And at this point, he probably had promised Bathsheba that her son would be the one. And that probably made the rounds in the house, that this little boy Solomon. And Absalom says, I don't think so. I don't think so. There's a lot behind this story. There's a lot behind the grief that David is showing here. Because David understands, I'm sure, that it's his own fault. It's his own fault. He, as the old saying goes, he made his bed, now he's got to lie in it. Mm-hmm. He's done this to himself. Now, folks, have you ever paid consequences for something you've done yourself? I certainly have. I have certainly suffered things because of things that I did, or because of things that I didn't do. Those are the worst, when you don't do something that you know you should, and then you suffer consequences because of that. And I'm not just talking about regular consequences, but great loss. David is suffering great loss. He's lost the heart of the people. He's lost his kingdom. He's lost those 10 concubines that he must have cared something about them, otherwise they wouldn't have ever become his concubines to begin with. He's lost one son, two sons. Bathsheba's baby, remember? He's lost Bathsheba's baby. He's lost a daughter because she was humbled, assaulted by her brother Amnon, raped by her own brother. He's lost a daughter. He's lost Amnon. And now he's lost Absalom. And that just brings it to a head for him. That is the last straw. And he breaks down and he weeps and wails. And there's more than just Absalom at stake here for him. He's not just grieving for Absalom. Yes, Absalom's his favorite. Yes, he loves Absalom greatly. But he's broken down because it's all built up to this point. And he is grieving over Absalom, but Absalom is now a proxy for Tamar, for Amnon, for the unnamed baby. Maybe even grief for Uriah. This man that was one of his mighty men, and he did him dirty. He did him dirty. The grief, it's like a dam bursting. The grief bursts out from him, and now he is weeping and wailing. He can't do anything else. He can't afford to do this. He's the king. He can't afford to be this way. He's the king. But folks, there's a reason for his grief. And that reason is not just the fact that he has lost a son, but it is that he caused it. He caused it. You know, I have nothing but compassion for people who are in a traffic accident and their mistake caused someone else's death, especially if it was one of their loved ones. Somebody be driving along and they make a mistake, and the next thing you know, one of their kids is dead in the car, or their spouse is dead in the car. I remember reading about a gentleman, and I think he committed suicide after this. But I remember reading about a gentleman. He was driving along in the van. His wife and kids were with him. And he drove, and he went to sleep because he was so tired. And he drove into a lake. And he was able to get out. But his family was not. And he couldn't live with it. He ended up committing suicide. I don't remember the man's name, not really important who he was, but that happens. Here's the thing, folk. Somebody is going through grief every day, every minute, every second. Somebody is getting the worst news of their life, especially if it's their own fault. If it's their own fault. Can you imagine? Can you imagine knowing that you, through an accident, cause someone else's death. Even if it was an accident. Even if it wasn't something that you could have controlled. Worse, what if it is something you could have controlled and it causes someone's death? One of your loved one's death. This is where David is. I have nothing but compassion for David's situation. But here, just like Aaron, back in the book of Leviticus, chapter number 9, when his two boys bring strange fire before the altar, and the flame comes out from the Lord and devours Nadab and Abihu, leaving Eleazar and Ithamar, Aaron has to keep going. He cannot grieve. Moses says, we'll grieve for you, but you cannot grieve. You've got the anointing oil upon you. You're the high priest. You have to go on. You cannot grieve for your sons. Not now. Can you imagine that? Can you imagine that? Do not grieve. There's another priest was told to do that. Ezekiel. Ezekiel was told that his wife was going to die. And he was forbidden to grieve for her. Consider that. Now, in this case, it wasn't Ezekiel's fault. It was all Israel's fault. And Ezekiel was being used as an example in his trial, what Israel was getting chastised for. Folks, it's important to understand what David's grief was really all about. It'll help you understand it because you'll go through the same thing. Did the Lord forgive David? Yes. Did the Lord restore David? Yes. Did David have to go through the ringer because of his own sin? Absolutely. But it's not just the sin with Bathsheba, is my point. It built up. It built up. From the minute he lusted after Abigail, or Ahinoam, whichever one was first, from the minute he lusted after Abigail, and he was happy when her husband was dead, he took her right in as his wife. Now there's you another, again, we went over this, it's been a little while, but think about Abigail. Is she not grieving for her husband? She married him, probably for his money. And now she's going to marry the king, or the soon-to-be king. He's not king at that time. He's running from Saul at that point in time. And she marries him that quickly? David's got a lot of skeletons in his closets. And now he's paying for it. His grief is real. His grief is extreme. His grief is all encompassing. But he's the king. He's the king. I mean, he can't afford to do this. He cannot afford to be paralyzed by his grief, because he is the king. Verse number 3, and the people got them by stealth that day into the city, as people being ashamed steal away when they flee in battle. But the king covered his face, and the king cried with a loud voice, O my son Absalom, O Absalom, my son, my son. And Joab came into the house to the king and said, Thou hast shamed this day the faces of all thy servants, which this day have saved thy life, and the lives of thy sons and of thy daughters, and the lives of thy wives, and the lives of thy concubines, in that thou lovest thine enemies and hatest thy friends. For thou hast declared this day that thou regardest neither princes nor servants. For this day I perceive that if Absalom had lived and all we had died this day, then it had pleased thee well. Oh boy. Joab says, hold on a minute. I know you're grieving, but here's the deal. Here's the deal. You're grieving the enemy, the one that would have killed us all. Is he more important than we are? This is the hardest thing when you're dealing with grief. When you're dealing with grief, especially if it's grief you know it's your own fault, or you have regrets about things, about the loss, there comes a time to move on. There comes a time to move on. That's hard to do. It's hard to do. David's going to have to move on from this. Because otherwise, and let's look and see what Joab has to say. Joab keeps going. Joab's not done. Now therefore, arise, go forth, and speak comfortably unto thy servants. For I swear by the Lord, if thou go not forth, there will not tarry one with thee this night, and that will be worse unto thee than all the evil that befell thee from thy youth until now. Then the king arose and sat in the gate. And they told unto all the people, saying, behold, the king doth sit in the gate. And all the people came before the king, for Israel had fled, every man to his tent. David's got a job to do. David's got to get on with his life. Is it a bad situation? Yes. Is it a situation of his own making? Yes. Does getting up in the gate cause him to quit grieving? No. He's going to grieve over this the rest of his life. He will. He's going to grieve over this the rest of his life. But he's got a job to do. He's got to get about the business. He cannot afford, as king, to grieve like a father would. This is hard. This is hard scripture to take. Knowing that there comes a time. Okay, you've messed up. Okay, you've been chastised over it. Okay, you've had your cry. Now let's get on with the program. That's hard. And it sounds calloused. It sounds so callous to say that. It feels mean for me to say that. But there comes a time when it's time to get over it. It's time to move on. There's work to be done. There's people still here. Your family's still here. You've got a job to do for the Lord. The Lord's still here, and the Lord still needs you to do the job He called you to do, even in the midst of this tragedy that you've gone through, even in the midst of all this, the Lord has a job for you, and it's time. There comes a time to get over the grief and get about the Lord's business. And David has to do that, as hard as it is. And I want to thank you for listening to the podcast for this week. I Want to Know More is a podcast ministry of Brother Lamar Owen. I'm out of the Macedonia Baptist Church located in the Silverstein community of Transylvania County. You can correspond with me by writing to broadcast@lamarowen.net. Again, that email address, broadcast@lamarowen.net. And join us again here next week for the I Want to Know More podcast.